name is Todd Durick. I'm from Northern California, Sacramento area, Davis. And I'm, I guess, one of the presenters of this panel, Mike Brown from Brown Broadcast in Portland, and Sakura, who is, I think, still out there. She is on the Prometheus board and also works with the group by name Common Frequency.
All right, Sean Sakura. It's you all.
And basically, I just wanted to explain, first of all, what Common Frequency was. And it's sort of a nonprofit I started a while ago, just to provide information to just anybody who wants about radio broadcasting and community radio, and to encourage community radio, because a lot of people, regular people, just have questions about, you know, how can I start a radio station, or what's, you know, why can't I start a radio station, or if somebody's at a radio station and they want information about how to about DJ training, because I used to be general manager of KDVS, which is Full Power in Davis, and it's a freeform station, and just trying to accumulate as much as I can about radio, community radio in general, the clearinghouse. So anyhow, late last year I found out that there's going to be a new non-commercial application window that the FCC was opening, and as soon as I heard about this, I remembered back to the translator window, which was in 2003, and I thought maybe there would be a lot of college and community applicants, and it turned out that, I don't know, that's not that many people applied, did they?
Well, there are 13,000 applicants, but
I mean, community and college.
Community, you could probably count them, you know, a couple of hundred out of those 13,000. Yeah.
And I just was like, what went wrong here? And for the Full Power window, this is, you know, a golden opportunity for, you know, to expand community radio. And again, I didn't see that many people talking about it, and I said, well, I got to do something about this. So I called up Mike. Of course, Prometheus is on it. NFCB is on this issue, and we're trying to organize outreach to get people to know about this. And it's not just, you know, do you want to start a radio station to, you know, people in the middle of nowhere. We all really have to band together, tell people about this, and you know, and find people in areas where there is population, in you know, specifically for you guys in the Northwest, and there are locations with population open, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And we just have to get the word out. And since we only have a little bit of time right now, the easiest way to do this is Mike prepared a PowerPoint presentation on the NCE filing window. And does anybody have any questions of what, how many people are here from full powers or low power radio stations? Or okay,
low power.
There is some difference between low power and full power, which is, you know, sort of. I think we should just
go into the slideshow.
Go into the slideshow. Yeah. Anybody have any questions?
Well,
actually,
in short, full power.
Can you email us the slideshow?
Yeah, actually, I was going to say, the one thing I wish I had done is had time before I came here to prepare a lot of materials. Actually, the best thing to do is put all on a CD. If you just give me your card or give me your email address, I will mail you a CD with this slideshow and a bunch of other reading material, and if you get through all of it and understand one tenth of it, you're doing great. Because there's a lot of written information. Prometheus actually is among the organizations that has prepared some wonderful primers on this. And the more you understand, the less you'll have to pay somebody else to explain it to you.
I'm Sakura Saunders from Common Frequency and Prometheus Radio Project, and helping out with outreach, just wanted to anticipate, you know, a couple of your guys' questions. Low power radio stations can't apply for a power station.
They can or cannot?
Cannot. They can't. So this is an opportunity to get into primary status and, you know, perhaps have the same amount of power. You can have a 100-watt full power station or much larger. You know, there are some costs associated with it, which I'm sure will be taken care of, you know, in terms of, you know, this is kind of like a preliminary engineering study, and then there's another tier engineering study, and then there's another tier engineering preparation for the application and things. It's much harder than a low-power radio application. And then the other thing is kind of what Mike already mentioned. There are a number of primers. Some are more technical than others. Some are more geared towards a general audience. But we have all sorts of outreach material prepared, and you can email any one of us, and we'd be happy to just send it your way. Also, Mike, are you still printing out maps for people?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I have some here if you want to see. Yeah, briefly about this mapping project. In fact, Common Frequency and Prometheus were among the co-sponsors of this project. We mapped the entire continental United States of where you could place a transmitter. This is not where you can cover. This is where you can put a transmitter. And these larger maps, I have like 7 of those, were broken up into bite-sized 8.5 by 11 pieces. They are in PDF form. We can email these to you. And they're a good starting point. They're not a substitute for an engineer, but they're a good starting point to see where you might be able to put a transmitter. Now,
I only have 4 of these, but okay.
You can grab any of these. I actually printed out just a few of the entire state of Washington. But these give you some idea that in some cases, if the topography is in your favor, you can stick a transmitter 40 miles out of town and on rare occasions 50 miles out of town and shoot back into the city and cover it quite nicely. And so if you see a green dot within 40 miles of the area you want to cover, there's a chance we can do something. So,
Just one other thing about common frequency. The other reason that what we're doing also is if you have any questions, instead of broadcast engineer is going to be quite busy up to the filing window day, you can just call us and we can answer any questions that you have.
And how do you get the other lights off? I don't know.
We may not need them off.
Okay, yeah, by the way, the slideshow that I would send you on CD would be fully narrated. This one I'm just going to do live, and actually, if either of you want to jump in, please do. So this thing will boot up in a moment.
Should we wait for questions at the end, or during? Can you stop it during the...
Well, what do you think? I think you just jump in. If you have a brief question, if there's something that's going to take a while, or is unrelated to the slideshow, let's keep it to the end. But if it's related to something that's on the screen at the time, and it's a relatively short question, I think we can just, you know, jump right in with the question right there. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Quite.
If we're trying to, when do we need to get out of here? 12:30, he said originally. That's not going to work, obviously. This is normally a 15-minute thing. And why is it not booting up? Okay, I didn't hit the on button. I just hit the power button. So now it's booting, and as soon as the green light stops flashing, it should have a... Here we go. And we have something here. Excellent. Okay. I call this the NCE filing window. NCE, of course, is non-commercial educational filing window. So, the FCC staff, the latest word we have, and this is less than a month old now, is that the window will probably be in the spring or summer of 2007. The thing that's holding it up, we're told time and time again by FCC staff, is there's still a backlog of unprocessed mutual exclusive, or these are competing applicants. Mutual exclusives at any time when you have 2 more applicants that all of them cannot be granted as is. And they're still clearing those out. Some of those date back 11 years ago. And I can, you know, if we had time, I could give you the history of how we got from there to here, but that's probably, we won't have time of that. The filing window itself, this is actually a new thing. Filing windows have been held for a lot of other classes, but they never before did the FCC have a filing window for full power non-commercial stations in the so-called reserve band. That's 91.9 and below. So if history repeats itself, this window could be as short as 5 weekdays, which is going to be nuts. Everything's done online. They could give us as little as 1 month advance notice. We're lobbying for 2 months, but that'll be just about all we have. Who can apply? Any bona fide nonprofit. You don't have to be a 501c3. Educational institutions, colleges, etc. There's no limit to the number of applications filed, and we know who's going to be filing hundreds or even thousands of them.
But the LPNM thing was, LPNMs can apply, but they...
Well, an LPFM, the board that controls an LPFM can apply, but the LPFM rules state that an LPFM cannot also have interest in other mass media. And so what has to happen is somehow that LPFM is either divested or just taken off the air. And I'm hoping that the former is what happened in most cases.
Would it also work to have a sister organization apply?
I think that's the better idea. But I also at the same time recognize that the LPFMs are, many of these are well organized and have volunteers and experience, and they may be logical applicants to apply. So I understand that, but it would be cleaner and easier, you know, if a sister organization or another organization that can work with
my a friendly organization.
My question.
Well,
you just said that, to the best of your knowledge, they're not going to have a filing limit for an individual entity. So an entity can...
That may be incorrect, actually. But
I sure hope it's incorrect. I know when I talked to Peter Doyle, he recognized the error of their ways with the translator filing window.
Yes.
I would like to see a limit.
You could very well be right.
Well, let's push for it if it isn't deterring you.
Yeah.
Because tell you what's going to happen. The people who run the religious broadcasting organizations are far better organized than any of us.
Yes.
And they will have thousands of applications per entity ready to fly, and they probably already need it.
Yes. Yeah, I hope you're right. As it sits now, there will be no limits, but they could change that, and I hope you're right.
It's really important, though. Right?
Yeah. Well, that'd be good. That would definitely be. But you know, they have ways around that, you know, as we know.
Well, yeah, we do too. like your LPFM can be another organization that you create.
Yeah.
Transfer your lessons.
Pretty much, almost all FCC applications are now filed online electronically, and the form to use here would be Form 340. This filing windows are by definition a closed process. No one will know who else is filing until the window closes. This eliminates what I call the vulture effect. In the old days with non-commercial filing windows, or it wasn't filing windows, it was just open season, you filed an application, it went to what's called a cutoff procedure, and then there was a 30-day period in which anyone else could file against you, and what the religious organizations in particular love to do is, in some cases, literally photocopy your application. It was on paper at the time. And file the same darn thing with just their name penciled in. Well, those vultures days are over, Frank. Thank you. So no more vultures. We do suggest that you hire experts. This is an order of magnitude more complicated than LPFM. And you do need a good engineering consultant and attorney. if you're an existing station already on the air, full power station, I suggest that you check for possible upgrades now. The interference rules actually have been changed in the last several years, and there may be some new opportunities that you didn't know existed or didn't exist the last time you had your consultant check. Filing the application can help you hold your turf because these non-commercial reserve band stations are a big jigsaw puzzle, and there's many of you probably have coverage far beyond what the FCC 60 dBU contour says you can get. But as more and more stations come on the air, your fringe coverage is going to get nibbled away. You'll have 3 years to build, or not build, but meanwhile, you are protected. So we suggest you file as soon as possible. As soon as the application filing window is announced, the changes for existing stations will be frozen, and the consultants will also be incredibly busy. So the time, if you're an existing station, to check to see if you can upgrade is now. And I'm going to be taking a quick look at KBCS to see what chances there are for them to upgrade. There's a lot of pent-up interest, several years of pent-up demand. The last time applications were accepted was 2000, I believe, and most of those didn't even get processed. So it's been at least 6 years since we've been able to apply for these things. So we have all these years of pent-up demand, a new resolve from several satellite broadcasters and a few new ones, and of course the existing megacasters will be out in force mass-producing. They're already, I'm sure, mass-producing these things already. But there is now a point system, and this point system essentially withstood years of court challenges, and we now, for the first time, will have a system that sort of favors local applicants over the megacasters who are from out of state. But the bad news is that most of the easy channels are gone. In fact, all the easy channels are gone in the large metropolitan areas. These are ones where you could have your pick of transmitter sites.
Michael,
are
the points that have been
spelled out in 340? No, but I will be explaining it here, and also in the stuff that I can email you, or actually there's links on my website. It explains it in pretty good detail. It's very similar, actually, to the low-power FM point system, if you're familiar with that. It shares a lot of things with that. We're finding some channels in surprising places. We found a channel less than 20 miles from downtown Detroit. Whoa, it's not going to cover downtown Detroit. But it surprised the heck out of us. That map project has been incredibly useful. We found a lot of channels that can cover metropolitan areas of 500,000 or so. Above that, the pickings are really slim. We found a channel in Stockton, which, by the way, nobody asked for yet.
Oh, I got it.
Back to 500,000 people they can cover. So Seattle, as far as I can tell so far, is gone. But I'm going to take another look at it soon. But it's probably not possible. But we should treat this as a last chance. There's going to be a lot of applications coming in. And unless you're in the middle of Wyoming, I think there's not going to be much left after this filing window. The new stations that apply have to protect 9 frequencies. And so you're pretty, most of you familiar with this. You have to go the 3 channels up, 3 channels down. There's also 2 so-called intermediate frequencies, which are 10.6 and 10.8 megahertz above you, that you have to protect. So there's a total of 9 frequencies that we have to examine anytime you want to do a new station. So so it's a big jigsaw puzzle, and I'm going to show you some pictures of contours here in just a second. Channel 6 is also an issue. Channel 6, the oral carrier for Channel 6 is approximately 87.7 megahertz. And so it's right below the bottom end of the band. If you have a channel 6 in your area, you can tune it in on most FM radios. So in your infinite wisdom, the FCC is requiring all non-commercial stations all the way up to 91.9, which makes no sense at all, to examine how much they would interfere with channel 6. And the lower you are in the band, the more stringent the requirements are. However, it doesn't have to be zero interference. You're actually allowed to interfere, and I put that in quotes, with up to 3,000 people. So you can minimize this interference area by putting your transmitter far away from a populated area. You can also use, by the way, a vertically polarized only antenna, and the formulas work much in your favor.
10 times advantage.
Exactly. In fact, in rural areas, it's 40 times advantage. And so the bottom line is, don't ever let anybody tell you that channel 6 is going to prevent you from putting your non-com station on. I have, in my experience in doing this for a pretty good long time, I've never found a case where we just couldn't do anything because of Channel 6. We might be restricted as to where we can go, but we usually are able to make it work out.
Interrupting, if you have Channel 6, friendly Channel 6 somewhere,
yes,
and a tower, co-locate on the tower, and you get a huge advantage there. But then the channel you pick in the FM band has to work at that tower.
Yes.
We're very near the tower.
Also, if the Channel 6 station affected, it can be talked into signing off on the whole project. It doesn't matter what the interference
right,
contours say, and about half of them are will work with you. The other half, we don't. What we usually do is we assume the Channel 6 station is going to be antagonistic, and we try to make it work. You know, we'll only go to them and beg if we have to. FM and TV translators, you know, most of the channels that we can put new non-commercial stations are already occupied by a religiocaster feeding it by a satellite. We can bump those guys off the air in most cases. And we do not have to protect TV Channel 6 translators. So just because you see a signal on your Channel 6 over the air, it may be a TV translator. If it's a low-power TV or a full-power TV, then it has to be protected. But
you have to ask your consultant because there are different classes.
Yeah.
As a Channel 6 translator and full-service TV, digital operator, say it's not a simple deal, but most of the translators and LPTVs will not be protected.
Mm-hmm.
You can go wipe them out and that's that.
Now, I could skip over this whole section in the interest of brevity if we're really pressed. It talks about how the contours all work. Do you guys want to go through this, or should I just skip it?
Real quick.
Okay, I'll just make it real quick. This is the 1 millivolt. This is KBLON for them. They're already on the air, but I'm going to use it as an example. 1 millivolt contour, or 60 dBU, this is the so-called protected contour. And the station we're building also has 3 interfering contours. You'll see, it's hard to see, but right near the crosshairs, there's a tiny magenta contour. And then there's 2 larger, cyan or orange contours, which are interfering contours. This orange one is the one that must not overlap with the protected contour of other co-channel stations on your frequency. This one would have to not overlap with stations that are first adjacent to you, one channel up or down, and this would be the contour that must not overlap with the protected contour of other folks' contours if you're second or third adjacent from them. And so I'm giving an example here. This is KNWR. My particular software color codes everything. And so all you have to know really is like colors must not overlap. So red must not overlap red. Orange must not overlap orange. So this Ellensburg, Washington station does not have a red or orange overlap. So we're protecting them and they're protecting us. You have to do it both ways, by the way. You have to protect them. And you can't build a station that is getting hammered by interference. You have to protect yourself, unlike low-power FM. So here's the first adjacent stations. If you look in the lower right-hand corner, KLCO is kind of their cyan contour is bumping up right against KBOO. And when we looked recently, they're increasing KBOO. This is why we couldn't, because somebody came in. And they almost bump right up against us, and those KBOOs kind of hemmed in. And these are a bunch of second and third adjacents all over the place. In fact, there's even a grandfathered short space one in there somewhere. So what we would do in actual practice with the software is we would draw all the other contours of all the other stations that we possibly would have to protect, and then we would see what we can fit in. So I kind of did that backwards, but you more or less get the idea?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Directional antennas. We can do directional antennas. If we did this little bitty directional antenna for KBOO, we could increase their current power, which is 27 kilowatts, all the way up to 43. Just take a little notch out of that, and all of a sudden, KLCO wouldn't be an issue. We're not going to do that, but it would be possible. City of license coverage. You only have to cover a half of the city of license with your 60 dBU, and you can pick your city of license. It's not predetermined. The studio, however, must be covered by 70 dBU, or this gets real complicated, the 70 dBU of any other station licensed to your same city, which is a stupid rule, or 25 miles. We're usually using the 25 miles thing as the reference. So you could have your transmitter over here, your city of license over here, and your studio over here. You can really spread these things out. After the applications are filed, the uncontested singletons, these are ones that have no competition, will be processed first. And we anticipate those will get granted quickly. In the case of the translator filing window, they started granting things in September, and the filing window was in March. So, you know, 5-6 months later, these singletons, if they rush, they could be on the air less than a year. The music exclusive folks, though, are not nearly as lucky, and that's going to be most of you. The FCC will announce a group of announce a list of MX groups, and then at that point, you can, and if you're smart, you'll come to a voluntary settlement with the other folks that you're MX'd with. If you're lucky, you'll mutually find a way to get out of each other's way. Either change frequencies, put directionals to stay out of each other's way, or convince them to drop out, etc. And like I said, if you're smart, you'll do this. You can do standalone technical solutions if you actually can find a way to bring yourself out of the MX group. You can just do that on their own and not even talk with the other folks. Or you can do universal settlements where you're communicating with all the other parties and you all mutually come up with some master grand plan. In the case of the religiocasters, in many cases they were just MX with other religiocasters. And so they said, well, I'll give you Spokane if you give me Tacoma. And they would horse trade amongst themselves, you know. And a lot of that was happening. Of course, well, we're a little different situation. We actually care about what the people we cover. Settlement payment. What was the
sounds good, very good. You don't even know
what
you said.
Settlement payments. Actually, the FCC on several occasions had opened greenmail windows. I hope they do that. Greenmail means basically legalized blackmail. When you can pay, the sky's the limit is what you can pay the other guy to get out of the way. I hope they don't do that, because then it's just going to favor those who have deep pockets. But it is normally accepted that you can pay legitimate and prudent expenses. And typically, I think that's like $10,000 to get somebody else to voluntarily withdraw an NCE application. I think that would probably be about average. So you may have to do that to expedite the process, or you could wait till it grinds through. Now, this is going to get really complicated, so I'll try to keep this simple. There's something so-called 307B analysis, fair distribution of service. This comes ahead of the point system. And this can be a double-edged sword. It can work to our favor or to our disadvantage. The FCC gives preference ahead of the point system to applicants who can serve underserved areas, so-called white or gray areas, either have no current non-commercial service, that's with a 60 dBU contour from a primary service station, not from a translator, so, or a gray area where they have no more than one. If you can have the minimum required service to these gray or white areas, and you have 5,000 more gray or white area persons than the next competitor down the line, the thing never goes to point system. You win. The downside of this, of course, is that those of us who just want a little station to cover the little town and apply for that may get blown out of the water by a religiocaster who is thinking big, who is putting up a transmitter at a big remote location, 10,000 feet above sea level, and serving this mammoth part of the state that you don't really care about so much. And they may win over you. So my suggestion to everybody is think big, don't think small. Let's look at the biggest coverage area, if there is gray or white area population. Now, only applicants, this is a really bad rule, only applicants who propose different cities of license will be compared to 307B. So, and we don't know what city of license the other guys are going to pick. And so the only way I can tell to maximize the chance that we don't get caught up in that conundrum is to pick very small towns for your city of license. Do not pick Olympia for your city of license. Pick some little pimple on the map as your city of license if there's a chance that you'll be in a 307B situation. Now, if you're granted on the basis of this gray and white area coverage, you have to build substantially as proposed, which the FCC staff has refused to define to me what that means, and operate for 4 full years. So if you propose a weird-ass directional with a finger out here and a finger out there, be prepared to build that thing, because you may be forced to. If 307B doesn't solve the MX situation, then and only then it goes to point system, and I'll pop through this real quickly, because you can read about this, diversity of ownership, technical superiority. Once again, even in the point system, if you cover a bigger area of population, even if they are not gray or white areas, you can have an advantage. Localism, you don't have to be local, but you get points for it. 75% of the board in this case, I think with LPFM, it's 50% of the board. Within 25 miles of the city of license, not the transmitter site, which went with LPFM. So, and you have to have in your governing document, in your of your organization, and very few, I'm sure, have this already, a statement that says that you are committed to, if you get this license, that you commit to making sure that forever now, for now and forevermore, that you have either your headquarters or 75% of your board within 25 miles of that city license. Got to put that in your governing documents. And I'm hoping to get a boilerplate version of language for that from the attorneys that work with us, so we don't have to all hire an attorney to do that.
That's only for 307.
No, if you want to claim, will this work? If you want to claim the 3 points, and that's the most, that's the biggest of all the points categories, 3 points, you're going to have to commit in writing in your organization's governing documents that you will forever have your headquarters, or it doesn't have to be both, or 75% of your board within 25 miles of the city of license that you choose.
That outweighs the 60%
I think the sister organization was in the context of an LPFM group that also wanted to get a full power, so and I don't know if I understood. Point system, statewide credit, and then there's tiebreakers if it isn't decided by now. The fewest other radio licenses or CPs, and in tiebreakers, this does include translators, by the way. Fewest pending applications, and if still tied, then they'll impose time sharing. But as I said earlier, the smart ones are going to try to settle voluntarily. The FCC will probably take years to sort out EMXs, just like they did this last time. Yeah.
And like Lockhart had found, and I don't know what else, if your organization gets the permit and you're really just like a sister organization or just applying because you didn't want the Lockhart FM to apply, if you get the permit, you can turn around and give it or sell it for $1 to the...
Unlike LPFM, these CPs or licenses are readily transferable, but the entity you transfer, if you win on the basis of points or 307B, the organization you transfer or sell it to has to have at least that number of points. They don't have to have the same points, they have to have at least the same total points.
Yeah, is it likely or possible that religious broadcasters would try to fund a friendly church in a small town?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Well, Calvary, of course, because they have local congregations, did that eventually with the LPFM, and in some cases the local congregation didn't even know it was being applied for on their name with their signature on it, or their virtual signature. So yeah, I'm sure some of these religious organizations have local congregations and some don't. Yeah, the educational media, probably the most prolific of all, doesn't have local congregations. But the Catholic Church now is getting a little fray. They've been kind of quiet through most of the last 10 years. Now they're going to go after it. And, of course, they have churches everywhere. So, yeah, I can guarantee that it's going to be under the name of the local Catholic Church, but prepared at some place, you know, at their national headquarters or whatever. So.
Seventh-day Adventist.
Seventh-day Adventist, yeah. So it's, and that will be considered local, and, of course, most of the material will come off the satellite. So, oh, well. transfers, yeah, as I said, if you're awarded a preference on 307B or point system, you can transfer it, but the new boards have to have at least the same number of points. So, now, in some cases, there's actually 55 or 6 of these nationwide where there are no more non-commercial channels left, but conversely, there are gray or white areas that can be served. A so-called commercial channel can be reserved for exclusive non-commercial use. And there's one or two of them in the state of Washington, and there's, I actually have a list of them here which I can hand out. And these, we're not sure if these are going to be in this upcoming filing window or not. But at some point in the next year or two, we'll be able to apply for these. The cities of license have already been determined on these. There's reference coordinates, although you can move it around somewhere. The frequencies are already determined. Most of the work's been done for us. And we're still not getting an answer whether it's going to be. My guess is it won't be in this window. It'll be a separate window. But we don't know for sure. But we should be prepared for that. 3-year construction permits, pretty much everything is that way now. LPFM is going to be that way here soon. Extensions are very difficult to obtain, so plan on building in those 3 years. As I said earlier, go for, did I misspell maximize? Okay. 1M? Go for the biggest coverage area possible. I should have used the spell checker. I do have one, but use a directional antenna. Actually, probably a good half of the non-commercial stations in the country, or almost half, are directional. And as I said, if you can serve gray or white areas, use a small, innocuous little community that nobody's heard of as your city of license. You only have to say it once an hour. And consider even tailoring the service area so that you can pick up white area coverage. If necessary, you know, use that directional antenna to send a finger of coverage out there if it picks up some white area. And start right away. And unless you have a really complicated application, I don't know too many engineers that are going to be over 5,000. The applications I'm preparing are usually going to be 3,000 or maybe a little bit less. As long as you do the shoe leather work, Dave, that's assuming that the engineering consultant doesn't have to fly out and spend 5 days looking around for sites. What I usually do is tell people, you do all the shoe leather, you do most of the phone calling, I'll point you in the right direction. I'll give you the details of where the tower sites are. I'll give you the contact information of the people to call. You handle the local zoning issues. You find the tower. Take lots of pictures. Bring your GPS. And that way you can keep your costs down. If you really want your engineer to do everything for you, they can. They're just going to cost you more. Legal for simple. If you keep it simple and we can use some boilerplated things for those bylaws changes, you shouldn't have to spend too much. I think you should use an attorney. You don't have to use an attorney, but I think you should. The way I approach it is do everything you can by yourself and then run it by a good attorney to check your work. And that's the best way to minimize the cost. And then you might get by with just, you know, 2 or 3 hours of work.
We're gonna reconvene in about 5 to 10 minutes.
Okay. All right. I'm just about done. Startup equipment is really variable depending on the power and the site and all that. And so I'll just pop over there. What? You want to go back to that? It's a huge range. That's assuming a fairly modest operation. I mean, KUOW has got a $6 million budget, but I don't think anybody is going to be in that category.
When you say legal work, isn't that a specialized attorney?
Yeah, that's a communication attorney, and that's just for the application, the initial application. I have to, you know, by means of proper disclosure, if you get into a mutually exclusive situation, you're doing a lot of complicated negotiations with the other parties, your engineering and legal costs are going to go up from there, and I just can't estimate what those are going to be. And it could be expensive. We hope it isn't, but it could be. This is just the cost to get that first application in. If we're lucky, you'll be a singleton. So the good thing to do if you're just getting started is get, you know, get free help now from some of the organizations, a couple of which are represented in this room, except NFCB. These folks all have good websites. Probably Prometheus and Common Frequency have the most useful information on it right now. And read all you can, and then call them for your questions. Yeah.
So maybe I missed it. What are the organizing that's going on to tell people about this file and donor?
We'll talk to you about that later. There's several things going on. So, actually, that's no, that isn't. I was going to say that's Lupito's board, but it isn't. That's the Oracle station on the lower left hand corner. And me up on a tower before my hair turned gray. another guy who was up there, the tower guy. So I think that's it, yeah. Okay.
So this is a CD that you're...
Yeah, this is narrated version of this is available on a CD. Actually, what I did, just to make it so people don't even have to download the PowerPoint, is I made it into a Windows Media file and an AVI file. And so you can play it on any computer. And actually, if you want, I can produce it onto a DVD and play it on your TV, but the text is hard to read on a TV. So just give me your either your address or email address or whatever, or a card, and I'll send you a bunch of stuff. And check on those websites. There's a lot of information already posted on those websites.
I think Common Frequency and Prometheus, we have talked to you guys.
Yeah,
I actually, if a couple of you want one, I have with me our packet that we are now giving out to people that give the full review of the legal requirements and some of our literature about different aspects of the application process. A little flow chart of like how, you know, the FCC process you will be put through the winner in order to get your license.
I hope this doesn't scare away anybody, because it seems a little intimidating, but it's
I have a quick question. What were you doing on the radio tab? What were you?
Without an OSHA approved.
Yeah,
That was the old days.
You fall, you're fired before you hit, buddy.
Actually, it was just surveying the work they were doing. I actually didn't do any
work. Okay, so you're just sort of cool.
Yeah. I climb towers only to look. I leave the tower work to the experts.
Okay, is there anyone that wants one of the packet?
Yes.
Do you need this, or is that already given with the league? First, we want one of those.
For the CD with stuff and then the slideshow?
Yeah, let me check.
Yeah, just write slideshow on there. Yeah, go ahead and take it if you want.
Yeah.
I'm going to take another look at where there's clusters of green, you can put transmitters that might actually have significant power. So I don't know whether, out where it says Brinions, get a high enough site with a power site buildable that can shoot back in Seattle or not. I doubt it, but I'm going to look at that. I'm pretty much going to have a national
forest
in front of me. Don't you? As soon as
you
get away from the
coast
line, right?
Yeah.
That's another question.
Yeah.
There does apply to reservations. The main one is different is the land use tax. They can kind of write their own zoning law or no law. But the FCC rules still apply.
There's one more thing that goes in that pocket.
What I don't. Yeah.
Your direction on
What we'll do is you will
If they're a real surveyor, they're probably not going to be comfortable.
I don't know if we would do like one of the regional gatherings.
You can't get far away
and ask them to take a shot. It's like the sense of to drive.
I mean, if you can't see,
we would certainly be happy to help with doing a workshop to launch the station and to build the station.
The real function of it isn't protection, but the purpose of having it be directional was
basically
to get,
we could talk more about that
over the city.
It's just a little long.
We don't have the packet. This is part of the packet.
It's not like it's real.